Hey, everybody. It's the Charlie Kirk Show. I asked the question, what is the legacy of the baby boomers going to be? To make my position perfectly clear, I think there are phenomenal baby boomers and there's crummy baby boomers. I think there's great millennials and crummy millennials, but it is a fact that the legacy of a generation, the baby boomer generation, will be an inheritor of a free country and then passing down an unfree country. We talk about that in regards to the national debt. We also have Kash Patel join us about fencing off funding and many other important topics, including the Biden and Trump document story. Email me, freedom@charliekirk.com. Get involved with Turning Point USA today at tpusa.com. That is tpusa.com. Start a high school chapter or college chapter at tpusa.com. That is tpusa.com. Email me your thoughts, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. That is freedom@charliekirk.com. And get involved with Turning Point USA today at tpusa.com. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Brought to you by the loan experts I trust, Andrew and Todd at Sierra Pacific Mortgage at andrewandtodd.com. The debt ceiling has been hit. That's right. We have officially hit our debt ceiling. If you don't remember what that is, our government, the U.S. government, runs a massive deficit. Now, there's a difference in the debt and the deficit. The debt is the cumulative amount of money that we owe. A deficit is the annual amount that we continually borrow. So deficit is annual and debt is cumulative. So in order for us to continue to keep the government functioning, we have to raise the debt ceiling. Usually this is done without a lot of controversy, but every couple of years, this gets to be a political lightning rod for good reason. No one likes talking about the debt. The debt is something that I've been talking about for quite some time. In fact, it was the first issue that I started to talk about all the way back in 2011 and 2012. The debt seems to be overly wonky, but it's actually very, very simple. Our debt is currently $31.4 trillion. Back in 2007, just 16 years ago, our debt was $10 trillion. So our debt has tripled in the last 15 years. You wonder how we get someone like Donald Trump. You wonder why populism is growing. You wonder why nationalism is growing. Because we see our leaders continually put our beloved country in financial insecurity, in financial insolvency, to keep our borders wide open and ship our jobs overseas and destroy the purchasing power of the American dollar. So in 2007, our debt was $10 trillion. I was in seventh grade in 2007, 15 years ago. 15 years later now, our debt has tripled. Now, we are in a serious debt doom spiral, and nobody wants to acknowledge it, and no one wants to talk about it. This is a ticking time bomb on the American Constitutional Republic. Debt is the slavery of the free. Now, this is technically different from a government shutdown. The shutdown is when Congress doesn't pass appropriations, so there's no legal approval to fund federal operations. With this, it's about the Treasury Department having the power to borrow money to fund spending that is already approved. The Treasury Department believes that it can get by without a debt ceiling increase for about 6 months before we get into what would be called uncharted territory. All this is uncharted territory. In the American sense, having a $31 trillion debt is uncharted territory. We owe more money than we are worth, by the way. We owe more money than the combined GDP of our nation. Some people are proposing goofy and wacky ideas like having a $1 trillion coin or to issue extremely unconventional bonds. Still, if this goes on long enough, the expected outcome is that the U.S. will default on its current debt obligations. Now, that probably won't happen. They probably will come to some deal, but it should not happen. You should not raise the debt ceiling without concessions of cutting spending, balanced budget plans, penny plans. But to raise the debt ceiling, Congress has to pass legislation. And by the way, the $31 trillion debt does not count unfunded liabilities. It does not count future promises. That is just what we currently owe. An unfunded liability would be, for example, let's pretend that you have a mortgage on your home, you have a car loan, but you've also basically told every single person in your neighborhood, hey, I'm going to give you $10,000 next week. That's an unfunded liability. You've said it. It's in writing. So you might say, Charlie, give me an example of unfunded liability. Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, what these programs will cost. In fact, some people estimate that our unfunded liability total is over $300 trillion. So the Biden administration is refusing to budge. They say, just raise it. Just raise the debt ceiling. What's the difference? And there's almost no budging from the House Republicans to the Biden White House. We still have some time. It doesn't need to happen today, but the negotiations are going to begin. Now, some people think the debt ceiling is pointless. They say, look, Congress is not going to stop borrowing overnight. But in some ways, this gives House Republicans some negotiation power. It gives them some leverage. It allows them to sit in a room with Joe Biden and say, look, we don't want the federal government twofold. We do not want to default on our liabilities, and I hope you don't either. Let's get some spending cuts done. Now, piling debt on the next generation is generational theft. Now, many of you in our audience are going to find this to be insulting, so I'm not blaming you. I'm going to be very clear. But it is a fact that the current adults, if you're 50 plus, you are somewhat, I don't want to say to blame, but you participated in this massive multi-decade generational plunder of future generations. My five-month-year-old daughter is going to have to live in an America that is less free, that is less financially secure, and less fiscally solvent because of the sugar high spending that has been going on the last 15 years. Now, a lot of people hate it when I say that. They say, Charlie, I've done everything perfectly. I voted the right way. I knock on doors. I save money. But it is a fact that the consensus of the 50 plus generation in America, they've done a lot right, but this is a terrible track record the last 15 years. However, it's not just in the sense of the debt ceiling fight. I'm going to broaden this for a second. I'm going to show you this is a pattern of immoral behavior that is manifested in a variety of different ways. Now, the children of today are now going to inherit a less free, less fiscally solvent America where the American dollar is basically equivalent to toilet paper. In fact, toilet paper is actually more valuable than the American dollar. That was the old joke we used to make. We used to say, yeah, you know, that the dollar bill is going to be like toilet paper. And now it's not really a joke. Now toilet paper actually is a lot more valuable in some sense and in some places than a dollar bill. Now, it depends on whether or not the, you know, there's panic in the streets and all that. However, the same immediate gut reaction that triggered the lockdowns is the same sort of philosophy that piled debt on the next generation, which is this, which is we're going to steal from children so I can be comfortable. We're going to steal from my kids and grandkids so I can live an easier and nicer life. Now, I know a lot of you don't subscribe to that. A lot of you find that sort of idea repulsive. You were against lockdowns. You were against these mandatory vaccines. You were against mask mandates. You are in the minority of Americans, by the way. The majority of Americans supported the lockdowns and they support this deficit spending. The West was built on a heroic idea of delayed gratification. I'm going to sacrifice today so my children can experience prosperity. And so what we've seen is that the greatest generation sacrificed so that the boomers could have a really economically flourishing life. And the 70s, 80s, and 90s, specifically the 80s and 90s, were boomtown USA. The American dream, house ownership, middle class incomes boomed. We balanced the budget in the 1990s. So we went from a balanced budget in the 1990s when I was born, 1993, to now where we have $31 trillion in debt. Now, I'm not going to blame boomers because I get a lot of angry emails if I dare ever say anything that boomers are the greatest generation in American history. So let me just say, I think boomers are the greatest generation in American history. They've never done anything wrong. In fact, how dare would I ever say anything critical of baby boomers? The harshest, most cruel emails I've ever received is if I dare say that boomers did anything except it with perfect masterstroke. So I would never, ever say that. But delayed gratification is what built the West. And what is clear is that our political leaders have decided to act in a pattern of behavior to say that children do not matter, but my convenience, my own Dow portfolio matters more than the fiscal well-being of future generations that will deteriorate and obliterate the dollar. And again, I want to reinforce this. I'm not blaming many of you because I get to see the emails right now. Many of you have done the right thing, but our political leaders have not. The idea pathogen that has infected the American political elite is that the future of America matters far less than my luxury, my comfort, and my life as a 70 or 80 year old. And that's an inversion of what actually built America. It used to be that I'm going to sacrifice so my kids could flourish. I'm a millennial and I get insulted all the time as being called lazy, as being called dumb, as being called short-sighted. And why is it okay to relentlessly attack millennials but never say to baby boomers, hey, maybe you guys shouldn't have spent all this money? Hey, everybody, Charlie Kirk here. 2022 is history. But have you thought about what you'll do in 2023, how you'll make it better than last year? That's why I have a challenge for you. Become better educated. Look, every new year has a new opportunity. So I have a great way for you to make the most of this one. Join me in helping take the online courses with Hillsdale College. Their amazing online courses are for free for all who wish to learn. They have significantly enriched my life. Look, take one of these fantastic courses, like the beauty of the Bible and the Genesis story. Study the writings of C.S. Lewis, or maybe even go into the meaning of America in Constitution 101. There are many courses to choose from. They're self-paced, they're free, they're fulfilling, they're deep, they're beautiful. Go to charlieforhillsdale.com and pick one of the more than 30 free Hillsdale online courses. I hope you'll accept my challenge. Pick whichever course you like. That is charlieforhillsdale.com. Resolve to go deeper and get more educated this year. charlieforhillsdale.com. Charlie, I'm a boomer. We've done everything right. How dare you even insinuate? Blame me for the debt? How dare you? I'm not saying that every single boomer has done this, but it is correct that this generation's legacy will be leaving an America that is less free and less fiscally solvent. That's a fact. I'm not blaming you, but it's a fact. Every generation has a legacy. This legacy will be, I'm going to hand an America that is a complete horror show. Charlie, how dare you blame baby boomers? It's the socialist agenda. Get a grip, Charlie. Okay, fine. I knew that if I even dared to touch on it, boom, it's the most sensitive topic of any topic I talk about. Because that is, I mean, as Friedrich Nietzsche would say, there's a central piety you are not allowed to touch. And even beginning to ask the question of, did maybe this generation not prioritize fiscal spending far enough? You get cross-examined. That's fine. And by the way, there's so many amazing baby. My parents are baby boomers. They're awesome. And there's so many great baby boomers. But there is a macro judgment that needs to be made of, huh, the net output of this generation is a lot of debt, a younger generation that is not exactly in a good place, and lockdowns, COVID vaccines. Is there something here that maybe requires some self-examination? Okay, I want to play a piece of tape here, though. It's just kind of fun. This was my first ever television interview talking about the debt. I was 18 years old, and I was still in high school when this interview happened. Play cut 92.
A lot of kids are feeling the effects of what we like to call, you know, with the Washington economy, with a lot of debt plummeting small business, with higher regulation and high taxes. We're just trying to reinstitute the founding principles, free market, fiscal responsibility. SOS Liberty is a nonpartisan. We don't consider this a Republican versus Democrat issue, but rather a generational one. And it's just math. If you look at the debt that our generation is going to have to inherit, the high interest and high taxes, we think that it's time for our generation to step up to the plate and sound the SOS signal to Washington.
Hey, that was when I was 18 years old, so I've at least been on message the last 11 years. I get a kick out of it. And look, someone says here, Charlie, how dare you make this pointless comparison? Baby boomers have done everything basically correct, raising kids, paying their mortgage. The real battle is against liberals. How dare you blame baby boomers? Again, I can't even talk. Honestly, this will probably be my last time ever bringing up this topic because I get such a tribal response when I bring this up, you know, regardless of how much nuance I contribute to it, regardless of me saying that there are wonderful baby boomers, regardless of me saying that it's mostly the powerful elite It's just the tribalism of the defense of a generation is remarkable. And it really makes you think that why is it then okay to, yeah, by the way, will you guys feel better if I just attack my own generation? Now watch how double standard this. Ready? Begin. Millennials are the worst. All they do is they stare at their phones all day long. They don't like to work. They live at their parents' basements. They smoke marijuana all day long. They're lazy. They don't work the hours they should. They're the gayest generation in history. They're not getting married. They don't have kids. Millennials are the worst. You guys okay with that? Oh, so it's, but wait, hold on a second. Millennials are boomers' kids. Can't say that. That's a thought crime. Charlie, stop blaming a generation. It's weak Republicans and Democrats. Walk it back. Apologize. How dare you attack baby boomers? Yeah, I'm not going to apologize for facts. Again, there's some wonderful, wonderful baby boomers. Charlie, you've lost me. Most of our debt came forward since Obama. This country has boarded the spending train since free healthcare socialist boondongle. Why blame the baby boomers? Have you ever tried to stop Pelosi? Yeah, I hate to break it to you, but who do you think those are? What do you think Pelosi, Schumer, Biden, and Trump are? I mean, actually, they might actually be on the edge. They might be on the edge of boomer and is that silent? Is that right? Yeah, Biden is silent. He's right on the edge, if I'm not mistaken. Stop blaming any taxpayers. All right. Someone says, Charlie, you're such a whiny millennial. Why don't you work harder? Wow. Okay. I apologize. Like I said earlier, baby boomers are the best. I will never, ever criticize them. I think they've done everything right. About 500 emails defending baby boomers. It is illuminating how it is perfectly acceptable to attack millennials and attack Generation Z, but you can't ask a broader question. Maybe there was, at least amongst some of the boomer powerful elite, a prioritization problem. Hey everybody, Charlie Kirk here, the inventor and CEO of MyPillow. Mike Lindell is always looking for ways to solve everyday problems. Have you ever picked up a towel set because it felt really soft in the store, but then when you go to use it, it's not very absorbent? It's basically a towel that's leaving you out to dry. That's why MyPillow has developed the MyPillow Towels, towels that work. I know it's mind-blowing, towels that actually dry you. The six-piece towel set that includes two bath towels, two hand towels, and two washcloths. They come in a variety of colors, and right now you can receive a six-piece set for only $39.98 with promo code Kirk. Go to MyPillow.com right now and click on the Radio Listener Special. MyPillow products come with a 10-year warranty and have their 60-day money-back guarantee. To receive this amazing offer on the six-piece set of MyPillow towels, go to MyPillow.com and click on the Radio Listener Special and use promo code Kirk. That's MyPillow.com. Use promo code Kirk or call 800-875-0425. That is MyPillow.com, promo code Kirk. Someone says, Charlie, you must be trolled. I'm a baby boomer, and I think it's actually our fault. So chill out, dude. Nope, not being trolled. These are about 600 to 800 emails of people that are regular listeners that we recognize. Very interesting. Okay. So by the way, someone says, Charlie, the issue is stolen elections. Well, hold on. Before, it's not even a matter of that. It's also people that were in political power. And let me just reemphasize this. There are fabulous members of all generations, and there are crummy members of all generations. But the unfortunate and the tragic fact is this, and it's not too late to fix, by the way, not too late at all, is that as things stand today, the legacy of a baby boomer generation, and yes, that is a broad categorization, and that is a big, big, big basket, is a generation that inherited a prosperous and strong country and will be handing down an unfree country. That's a fact, and it's a sad fact, and it's not one that we should have delight in. And I do want to just reinforce this point, though, that the gut instinct was what? Close down the schools, mask the kids. That same sort of philosophy in some ways made it morally acceptable to go from $10 trillion to $31 trillion. And some of you are making good points in the emails. Charlie, I do blame, like for this one right here is actually defending me. Charlie, I'm a boomer. You're not wrong. It was elected boomers who passed the laws and budgets. They were the early globalists and they were big businessmen. They were raised differently, but did the wrong thing for profits and power. That is correct. is that there was a belief that the main drivers of the architecture of the neoliberal globalist experiment was largely driven by boomers. Now, that's not to say every boomer subscribed to it, but it was a unique boomer phenomenon in the late 70s and 80s and 90s that really put forward what we know of as international neoliberalism. I'll just say one final thought. I am willing to say that millennials are largely entitled. They have bad politics. They don't work nearly as hard as they should. They don't prioritize the good, the true, and the beautiful. I am relentlessly critical against my own generation. I encourage those of you that are baby boomers to be willing to do the same. Joining us now is Kash Patel. Kash, welcome to the program. Kash, you have a new book out called Government Gangsters. I wanted to get you on here, Kash, to walk us through the latest on the Biden document saga and this Hunter Biden rent payment. Very interesting and bizarre. Kash, what's the latest?
Yeah, here's what's going down. Basically, the amount of money that Hunter Biden was paying rent in that house is the exact same sum of money that's tied to a Chinese Communist Party pipeline of funding. And you would say, hey, that's a funny coincidence. How is it the exact same amount to the dollar? And I believe it's because it's part of a money laundering cover-up operation. But the bigger problem that really no one's talking about is Joe Biden's now felony tax issue. Joe Biden made it a stand-up point of his campaign that he was so transparent, he released all of his tax returns. Well, thanks for doing that. But in your tax returns, it doesn't say that you received $42,000 a month from your son, Hunter Biden, for rent. Did you just forget to write that down for an entire year, north of $500,000? Is the IRS and the Treasury Department investigating you for tax fraud?
Yeah. And so, but it looks as if it's just a one-to-one transfer. I mean, could Hunter Biden have made it any obvious, like not round up the dollar? So what was it, $49,000, like $510 or something? I'm approximating. But from a refund of, was it a Chinese Communist Party surrogate company, satellite company? Yeah. That's what CFEC or something, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's a surrogate company. And you're right. You could have structured the transaction totally differently. But I think with these guys, what the American public has learned is that they are so arrogant, they just think they're never going to get caught. I mean, the classified document itself is just the best example of that. Joe Biden goes on a tirade against Trump. And what do we find out? I've been saying all along, it's not 5 sets. We're going to have 10, 15 sets of documents found that have now been in the wild for 6+ years that are all classified. And it's because they never thought that they were going to get caught. The bigger question is, what do those documents contain, and did Joe Biden take them to protect his son and their interests vis-a-vis the CCP and make sure his son never got prosecuted for anything? And now do those countries who are our enemies have leverage over the sitting commander-in-chief?
And so how do you anticipate then these special counsels playing out? There are two active special counsels looking into a former president and a current president on the same issue. I mean, needless to say, and maybe I'm wrong, I don't think this has ever happened in American history before.
No, it's not. And I think it's going to play out to show the American people that there's a two-tier system of justice for all those people that say we've been spitting conspiracy theories. I think that's exactly what's going to happen. And Merrick Garland is going to have the boomerang come back on his face. But the problem with the new special counsel is he is nothing more than a government gangster, as I call him, Rod Rosenstein's protege, who authorized the surveillance of me when I was running Russiagate by subpoenaing my personal records. This is who we're dealing with. The same guy, Robert Hur, authorized the fraudulent FISA warrant on Donald Trump. So now we have a corrupt DC swamp monster who leaves his 7-figure law firm to go back and become special counsel so that these special counsels, all they do is exonerate the corruption at the FBI and DOJ. And all they, the only other thing they do is target politically people they want to kneecap. And I think what I've said repeatedly is our target is not Joe Biden. Who cares? Our target needs to be the administrative state.
Yes.
And we have to show the American people.
Well, and yeah, I sorry to interrupt you, Kash, but I mean, I was just talking on air to Jim Jordan and I'd love our audience's thoughts on this. I said, guys, don't take the Biden bait. They're like, yeah, we want to get these. I said, this is a waste of time. Kash, yeah. You ran successfully the Russia investigation from the House. Can you just share some wisdom as to how careful the House Republicans need to be? Because you only have, you've limited time, energy, and resources, and focusing it on Joe Biden, the octogenarian socialist, who, like, I hate to be morbid about it, But 10 years from now, do you think that Joe Biden is going to be the threat to the republic, or the fourth branch of government will be, right? I mean,
no, that's exactly it. And we have an opportunity, a very limited window. And I hope this weaponization of the federal government subcommittee and Commerce Committee gets the subpoenas going immediately, not at Joe Biden, but at the DOJ and at the FBI, at Garland, at Wray, at Robert Hur, and all of their underlings who are involved in these investigations, and get the documentation like we did in Russiagate for the American people. Get the FBI reporting on this, because listen, I'm going to tell you, and I've called it for a long time, this investigation did not begin in November of 2022 because some librarians referred it to the Department of Justice. This investigation has been known to DOJ and FBI for some time. And there's a document called an electronic communication that the FBI has to write every time they open an investigation. We subpoenaed that document from the FBI and DOJ for Russiagate. It took them months to get it to us, but it's what blew the whole thing open, destroyed their timeline, and set us on the road to expose their corruption. And this subcommittee needs to get that single sheet of paper showing why the FBI and DOJ and when they opened this investigation.
So if we look at Solinsky's rules for radicals, which we obviously have to be very careful employing because they are Luciferian, but there is some wisdom in actually how to use these rules to pressure evil and use it against them. There's a couple rules that I want to highlight here. And Cash, I think you'll be able to offer some guidance on how House Republicans can proceed. The first is obviously keep the pressure on. I don't think that's going to be a problem. By the way, can we get the list, Blake or Andrew, of who's on the House Oversight Committee? It is a team of rock stars. And credit to Speaker McCarthy. I mean, this is a loaded. I mean, we got Ana Paulina Luna. We got Lauren Boebert. We got Marjorie Taylor Greene. There will be no lack of oversight coming from the House Oversight Committee. So anyone that had their doubts, Charlie, I don't know if McCarthy is going to actually go through with his deal. Perfectly legitimate doubts. We got lots of emails on that. You can now look at that oversight committee and say, wow, okay, promise made, promise kept. But here's one that's important. It must be a tactic that people enjoy. But finally, rule 13, which is important. Pick the target, freeze it, personalize it, and polarize it. So Cash, out of the whole roster of deep state gangsters and criminals, Christopher Wray, Peter Strzok Smirk, Lisa Page, we have Mayorkas, we have Cardona, we have this mass portfolio, but I'm afraid they're going to go too wide. Who, Cash, should we say this is who we are going to pick, target, freeze, personalize, polarize?
Easy. One person, Chris Wray. He has single-handedly destroyed our law enforcement empire that used to be the world's premier law enforcement agency. He has weaponized it for political purposes, and he has allowed the cover-up to cover up some of the worst criminal conduct by FBI and DOJ in United States history. There is no greater government gangster. I think he's worse than Merrick Garland. I think Chris Wray is far worse than Merrick Garland at the AG's office, and that's saying something. So here's the thing. Let's look at everything Chris Wray, from his private jet-funded trips that are taxpayer-funded, to his abuse of the FISA court process, to his systematic deployment of confidential human sources to cover up FBI corruption, be it January 6th or elsewhere. We need all of that investigated, and it funnels back to one person, Christopher Wray.
So I agree, but I will be honest. I think that, remember, you want to employ a tactic that your people enjoy, and a tactic that goes too long becomes a drag. It's right out of Alinsky's book. And I'm afraid that Wray is a little bit too abstract. Do you think you could also get to that sort of progress in the best possible sense if we go after Merrick Garland?
I do. I think you can get it from either of them. And we've talked about this on your show previously. It would be slow normally if we didn't have the bench that you just outlined. And if that bench is equipped with the power to fence the money and take the DOJ and FBI's pockets of money, then we'll make progress.
Walk us through what fencing in the money is.
Yeah, it's really simple. Look, all budgeting matters under the Constitution have to originate and end in the House of Representatives. That means the United States Congress's lower chamber must authorize and approve all monetary investments for our departments and agencies. Fencing simply means an oversight committee can come in and say, hey, you FBI, DOJ, CIA, NSA, you're not responding to our subpoenas. You're not providing us witnesses. We're going to take that pot of $10 million for Operation X, and I'm going to build a wall around it, and you can't legally touch it. And we're going to keep doing it until you produce the documents and witnesses that we have demanded so we can conduct constitutional oversight. Look, when these agencies don't respond to subpoenas, it's because they are covering up corruption. You know that that's what's happening now, but the only way to get through it is to take their money.
I agree. So, Cash, let's go through some concrete examples. In fact, I think you should write a piece that we can post on charliekirk.com. 10 examples of what we can fence in. So for an easy one that we've talked about before, Christopher Wray's taxpayer-funded jet that he used, I believe, unconstitutionally and illegally to go vacation in the Adirondacks that was appropriated for counterterrorism use, and he uses the taxpayer-funded Gulfstream for his own leisure. That's an example. What are some other examples? Merrick Garland's espresso machine on the fifth floor of the Department of Justice. I say that half kiddingly.
I know, but it's unfortunately a sad reality. Some other basic examples are, we're going to take away the pockets of millions for your new furniture. We're not going to go in there and take away systematic operational necessity funding. Then we'll get attacked and we shouldn't do that.
Yes.
But we're going to take away the funding for your 10 new Cadillacs. We're going to take away the funding for your new home computer system. We're going to take away the funding so you can hire 87,000 IRS agents and make them carry guns. That's the type of funding we can take away and hold.
Yeah. So, and how much of this do we know of? I mean, because some of these departments, they don't do line item budgeting, but I'm sure there's travel expenses, there's retreats, right? There's, taxpayer funded lunches, and some of it might not be opulent. Some of it might be opulent. But what you're trying to say, though, is that the little perks, the little benefits, the little niceties that many of these people use as a way to make a bureaucratic job a little bit nicer, you hold hostage as a means to the end of getting documents, witness testimony, and facts.
It's even easier than that, Charlie, because you don't have to know the exact expenditure of where that money is going, Andy McCabe's $20,000 office desk, because Congress does the line items. So Congress knows there's $10 million set aside for quote-unquote furniture. Congress knows there's $10 million set aside for travel. Congress knows there's $5 million set aside for new paint. So all you have to do is go fence that money. The agencies and departments decide how to expend that on a granular level. But when you seize the entire pool of money, they can't do it at the macro level. So Congress knows the budget. Somebody has to go in there and read it. That's usually step one, which most members of Congress haven't done. And then you pick out the items to fence.
Yeah. And so, but we do this also in concert and in harmony with, for example, the weaponization of government committee.
Yeah.
So, for example, if we're investigating Five Eyes, right, and we're investigating the CIA, you go after that $8 million retreat budget that Langley uses, correct?
That's exactly right. And as long as the committee chairman and women are talking to each other about what subpoenas they're sending where, and we don't duplicate efforts, then you can actually double down on your authority and power and say, we're going to fence this money on oversight. You guys go fence that money on the weaponization committee. We could really have a two-pronged system of attack here.
I think it's so smart. And has House leadership at least signaled the openness and the willingness to play hardball like this? And Ryan and Boehner didn't do this, right?
Yeah, Ryan failed. I had to go at him for months to let me do it one time. And then we got 1,000 pages of FBI documents exposing the FISA corruption. Shocker, shocker. He wouldn't let us do it again. So McCarthy, hopefully, I haven't heard a signal that he won't, but hopefully he starts signaling to these members of Congress when the subpoenas start going out that he will back their play.
Well, this is the big play, everybody. And so for some of you out there that say, hey, there is very little upside to controlling the House because we get a lot of emails. Charlie, what does it matter?
Yeah.
No, now this is a way to get real systemic change with very little effort that is actually also popular in the eyes of the American people. If you go after the perks of bureaucrats, if you go after the lifestyle niceties of the fourth branch of government and use that as a way to find out what's really going on, that is an 80-20 issue, a 90-10 issue. Like you said, you don't go after operational funding. You go after the little luxuries. Check out Cash's new book, Government Gangsters. Cash, thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Email me your thoughts, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thank you so much for listening, and God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.